You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
The International Council of Unitarians and Universalists every month sends around a reading for doing with the chalice lightings. The one for January of this year was words that were actually written in the 16th century by a man named Francis David, or in Hungarian, David Ferenc, who church in Hungary, although it wasn't called Unitarian for its first 50 years. So these are his words. Faith is the gift of God. Inner purity and love and an honest life and good deeds. Love is the ultimate interpretation and completion of the law. Love is the plenitude of the law. Love is a royal commandment. Love is the true freedom which does not bear the bondage of fear. The highest treasure of humankind. Words by Francis David. Good morning and welcome to this regular meeting for worship. It is called as we serve each other by thoughtful and caring attention to each other's needs. For inspiration and comfort, the values and principles that we try to in our daily lives. My name is John Clifford. I'm a visiting minister to this church, actually for the fourth time, since the first time in 1978. I'm the minister emeritus of the Glasgow Unitarian Church in Scotland. My wife, Barbara, and I are pleased to share these few weeks with you and to enhance the reality of the international nature of our living community of faith. I'll be speaking and focusing and concentrating on the Edict of Torda, which I understand you've also had one or two presentations about in the last couple of months, but you haven't actually heard the Edict of Torda and what all this fuss is about. I'm going to read it just before I start the sermon. Now, the edict was actually agreed by the Diet, the Parliament of Transylvania, and the prince who was in charge at that time, John Sigismund Zápolya. Our Royal Highness, as he has decreed on matters of religion, together with the Diet, now confirms, again, that in every place the preachers shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, then it shall be considered good. But if not, no one shall compel them, for their soul would not be satisfied. But they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. Therefore, none of the superintendents or others shall annoy or abuse the preachers on account of their religion, in accordance with the previous resolutions of the Diet, or allow any to be imprisoned, punished by removal from his post on account of his teachings, for faith from hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So that is the relatively short but important Edict of Torda. That was passed 450 years ago, this past January. Transylvania was a European backwater then. It was not a province of Hungary, but like an attached province with its own identity. and it became effectively a buffer between Suleiman the Great of the Ottoman Empire, who had a lot to do with maintaining stability in that area, between the Sultan to the south and so-called Christian civilization to the west. The edict itself was proclaimed following several public debates between different religious groups: Roman Catholics, Swiss Calvinists, German Lutherans, and the followers of the, quote, pure Christianity of Jesus, close quote, who would come to be called Unitarians. These four groups had special status. But the Eastern Orthodox, the Jews, Muslims, and any other small groups like Anabaptists were not part of this special status tolerated. The edict is a very important historic pivot, but it is not, as many Unitarians claim, the first such proclamation to benefit from formal policies of religious freedom. That honor probably goes to the inhabitants of India during the reign of the Emperor Ashoka. While Ashoka embraced Buddhism, he officially promoted religious tolerance and set up teaching monuments all over the country. Closer to Torda Europe in geography and time, the first caliph of Cordoba, also after several bloody wars, established a realm where Jews and Christians could live peaceably with real, if not total, religious freedom. The caliphate comprised the southern two-thirds of Spain and Portugal, with a bit of northern Africa and some Mediterranean islands. And this was around the Common Era, 921 to 961, which was some 600 years before the Edict of Torda. So when Unitarians start getting on their soapbox and saying, well, we were the ones who proclaimed the first tolerant religious freedom, we really are in shaky grounds. Now, we don't have the ceremony of confirmation in our English-speaking churches, although a few, particularly in the States, do have coming-of-age ceremonies. But I've been privileged to be at a Hungarian Unitarian confirmation service. The teenagers, having been studying for some months and having completed a personal project, are gently interrogated by the minister before the congregation about their self-understandings, Unitarians, and their desire to become full members of the community. The youngsters are not expected to feedback sections of the Unitarian Catechism verbatim, but it was the key normative document that organized their studies. So I'll give you a selection of the answers. I won't do the full thing, but a selection of the answers. And this goes back 300 years, and it's still the same today. The founder of the Unitarian Church was Francis David, or David Ferenc in Hungarian, born in Kolozsvár around 1510. He devoted his life to the restoration of the pure Christianity of Jesus. He did this by preaching and spreading the pure Christianity of Jesus through the pulpit, debates, and books. The most important result of the spreading of the Unitarian faith was the proclamation of religious freedom at the Diet of Torda in 1568. It was first declared to the world in Transylvania that everyone can exercise that religion which agrees with their understanding, because faith is the gift of God. We consider the founding of the Unitarian Church to be from the proclamation of this law. Only the providence of God, the law of religious freedom, and the heroic persistence of a portion of our believers saved the church from total destruction. Unquote. So that's a small part of what the youngsters are taught today and have been taught for generations. So the Unitarian Catechism dates the foundation of the Unitarian Church in Hungary from the Edict of Torda. Catechism focuses on Francis David's central role. It is, of course, a religious history teaching text, not a political history. But Prince John Sigismund Zápolya, predecessor, his Polish mother, Queen Isabella, also had key roles, as did other lay people. In common with the law and custom of the time, monarchs had central political roles. Now, we know that mothers have a strong influence on our values, but not often do we see the political effects as clearly as we can from Isabella to her son, John. So while acknowledging the Torah by Reverend Francis David, including the founding of the Unitarian Church, there are many layers in this history, and we will explore a couple of them. Isabella was the eldest daughter of the King of Poland, Sigismund I, and he's also given the title the Old. So Sigismund I the Old. As such, she was a valuable commodity. And after a few alternative matches did not work out, she was married to the king of Hungary, John Zápolya, but on condition that he conclude a treaty with the Habsburg Archduke Ferdinand. Now, Ferdinand had his eyes on adding Hungary to the Habsburg folder. And in 1538, a treaty saw the Habsburgs gain territory in Western Hungary, while Zápolya's holdings in Eastern Hungary and Transylvania, and the crown, the important crown, would be inherited by Archduke Ferdinand. The treaty signed, Isabella was married in 1539, and this made her the queen consort of Hungary. It was a politically turbulent time, with the Habsburgs pushing to add to their holdings, and Sultan Suleiman the Great wanting a vassal state as a buffer. In addition, local nobles wanted to keep Hungary independent. John Zápolya wasn't just king of Hungary, he was also carried the title Voivoda, that is, the military chief or protector that is sometimes translated as duke or prince of Transylvania. Isabella and John had a son, John Sigismund Zápolya, born just 2 weeks before the king died. So there was an heir, and the Hungarian nobility, not wanting to honor the 1538 treaty, made while there was no heir, declared the infant King of Hungary, with mother Queen Isabella his regent. Now, as you can imagine, Ferdinand was not best pleased. So he besieged Buda, unsuccessfully, came back and besieged it again, and the second time having to lift the siege when Sultan Suleiman came in with his troops and took over. The infant king and regent were given vassal status to Transylvania by Sultan Suleiman, and the Transylvanian Diet, with a little bit of hesitation, agreed to this. Over the next several years, the queen, who was also the regent, Isabella, had to balance conflicting forces, including leaders in Hungary who were working with Ferdinand to bring Habsburg control to Hungary. Isabella resisted, but finally in 1551, she was in a corner and had to relinquish the Hungarian crown and leave for Poland, where her brother was now the king. The Hungarian situation remained unstable, however, and she was urged to return to Transylvania, which she did in 1556, accompanied by Ottoman troops. The next month, the Transylvanian Diet authorized a 5-year regency, her son John then being 16. And it was about this time that the church authorities in Kolozsvár, which was the capital of Transylvania and the largest city, they elected one Francis David as chief minister. That was the chief preacher in the city elected by the different religious communities. And at that time, he was the bishop of the Transylvanian Hungarian-speaking Lutherans. So he was the bishop of that group from 1557 to 1559. So we're creeping up on 1568. We'll get there. And it was in 1557, 11 years before the Edict of Torda, that Isabella issued a decree of religious tolerance. The decree called for, quote, each person to maintain whatever religious faith he wishes with old or new rituals, while we at the same time leave it to their judgment to do as they please in the matter of faith, just so long as they bring no harm to bear on anyone at all. That's quite an edict saying that the state will not interfere in religion, and we want you to have whatever freedom you want as long as you don't oppress anybody else. She had been encouraged in this liberal direction by her court physician. His name was George Biandrata. He was from Italy. His name is sometimes given in the Latin, George Blondrata. He was an Italian who had spent some time with the Polish Socinians. And the Polish Socinians were sometimes called the minor brethren, but they were later recognized as Unitarians. We'll hear more about George in a few minutes. As it turned out, Isabella died only 2 years after her radical decree. And John, her son, became Prince of Transylvania. Biandrata stayed on as court physician and was influential in getting John to invite Francis, who was the official chief preacher for the religious groups in the city, to become the court preacher. Now, there's no doubt that Prince John's edict, the Edict of Torta, is a more developed proclamation than Regent Isabella's decree. But I have the distinct impression that because she didn't identify herself with a denomination, and because she was a woman, even though she was the regent, her role in the development of religious toleration has not been properly recognized. And this is a common bias in history that is only recently becoming recognized. At a time when Francis David was a Lutheran bishop, Isabella was publicly proclaiming inclusive Unitarian tolerance, although not using the Unitarian name, which had to wait another 43 years before it was invented. History is full of might have been moments. Novels have been written, even movies have been written. What if something had been slightly different? How would history have worked out? And it would be fascinating to reflect on how Isabella and Francis might have worked together had she lived longer. Or to reflect on how history might have allowed real consolidation of the early Unitarian Church had Prince John not died in a road accident, aged 31, only 3 years after the Edict of Torta. In a few short years, 15 years, from 1556 to 1571, Unitarians had built up an impressive list of achievements, a printing press, a theological school, a few hundred congregations, but the protection and patronage of the crown died when John did. When John died, Stefan Bartery, a Hungarian Roman Catholic noble and a one-time supporter of John, was offered the crown of Transylvania on condition that he recognize and abide by the Edict of Torta. He agreed and sort of kept his promise while pushing at the boundaries. As the Catechism says, dark times followed. Bartery cleared Unitarians from court, which was his right as the prince, except for the aforementioned George Biandrata and one other. He confiscated the printing press, and he removed Francis David from the post of court preacher. He took the church buildings, which Unitarians had acquired through conversion, and returned them to their former owners. And he said, fine, the recognized groups, Catholics, Lutherans, Calvinists, and Unitarians, they had rights to exist, but only as they were when he became prince. In 1572, when he had the crown and he agreed to the thing, the diet confirmed the Edict of Tolerance, but added a prohibition to innovation or continuing reform. Meantime, Bartery became king of Poland through marriage in 1576. So there's a lot going on. There's armies marching back and forth and heads rolling and everything. The restrictive actions of Bartery continued. He limited Unitarians to holding synods in only Kolozsvár and Torta. And the crime of innovation This was the worst thing for Francis Davitt, who understood Unitarianism to be in perpetual reformation. He was trying to create the kingdom of God and was not minded to be limited by government decree. At a synod in Torda in 1578, 7 years after John died, with 322 ministers attending this synod, they confirmed the principle of free inquiry, declaring that no one can be accused of violating the innovation law if searching questions which haven't yet been decided by synod. That same month, in March 1578, George Biandrata, who was not only the court physician, but a prominent lay Unitarian, acted. He believed that if Francis did not abandon his latest change to theology and ritual, which was that as Jesus was a human being, prayers should not be addressed through him, that this innovation would put the church itself in grave danger. Biandrata recognized that the protection afforded by the Edict of Torda was all they had against a Roman Catholic monarch and a court full of other religious groups who were anxious to do away with the troublesome Unitarians. If Francis pushed through his latest reform, the young church would be destroyed, Biandrata thought. He tried hard to dissuade Francis, even bringing Faustus Socinus, about whom we sang in our first hymn, Faustus Socinus, the leader of the Polish Unitarians, to Kolozsvár for intense discussions for 2 weeks to try to persuade Francis with theological arguments that he should back off. Surely Francis could see that his actions endangered the church he had effectively created. But for Francis, there was no room for compromise. Since Socinus couldn't persuade Francis, early in 1579, Biandrata laid charges against him and his followers at the synod in Torda. This was the gathering of the church. But the end of February in 1579, synod affirmed that Unitarians did not innovate, but they only developed their previous teachings. Seeking for religious knowledge and truth is not only allowed, but it is the duty of ministers. So Biandrata lost his case against Francis David at synod. So he went to court and denounced Francis David before Bartery, who in response forbade the Unitarian reformer to preach, detained him under house arrest, and presented a charge before the Diet, because the Diet would sit as a court. The Diet, however, warned the prince that in this case, he shouldn't be carried away by any unconsidered decision, but act deliberately, appealing to the advice of both the lay and the church judges. Consideration of the case was held over for another month, when on the 2nd of June, the majority, including some prominent Unitarians, declared Francis to be guilty of innovation. Bartery then sentenced Francis to life imprisonment in the fortress of Deva. 1 month later, the Unitarian Synod accepted, under pressure from Biandrata, a creed which included Jesus' divinity and the appropriateness of addressing prayers to him. A consistorium of 24 members to assist the bishop was created, and a new bishop confirmed by Bartery. A few months later, the Diet agreed with Bartery that the Jesuits could enter and work in Transylvania. Francis died in prison later that year, 1579, his spirit stronger than his body. As the outline history of the Unitarian Church in Hungary says, prison didn't break Francis David's spirit. This is indicated by his testimony carved on the wall of his cell. Neither the sword of popes, nor the cross, nor the image of death, nothing will halt the march of truth. I wrote what I felt, and that is what I preached with trusting spirit. I am convinced that after my destruction, the teachings of the false prophets will collapse. Brave man. But through the hard, repressive times, the Edict of Torda did protect the suffering and weak church, which lives on today, which is one reason we celebrate the Edict. When Unitarians had political power and influence, they enacted a law of toleration rather than a law of entrenchment. And that made all the difference. For that reason, we give thanks for the life of Francis David and for the life of the Unitarian Prince of Transylvania, John Sigismund Zápolya. But we should also give thanks for the life of Isabella, one-time Queen of Hungary, and then Regent of Hungary, and then Regent of Transylvania. And I suggest we should also be giving thanks for George Biandrata, who tried to save the church by moving against its popular leader. It is likely that his belief that the whole church's existence was at stake was correct. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.